hard to just stop when you're spinning around.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Hello, Oshkosh, Amory, Wisconsin Rapids, Richland Center, Wausau, Waukesha, and in Madison tonight. Amory, I'm so excited. Lake Eyre followed me on Twitter. Amory, Carol, has become like my magical place that I want to go where everything is going to be wonderful.
Oh. Okay.
I have no reason for that except it just thinking about it makes me happy.
Well, then you should go. Then you should go. And you know what? If it's as magical as you say, you pass that along to me and maybe we'll just make a road trip ourselves.
It's a cruise. It's north of the Twin Cities, so it's a ways up there, but I think it would definitely be worth
it. Listen, I got nothing but time.
Hey, we're going to do a little switch. Our guest, Elsie Flynard, the mayor of Podcast Town, we expected in studio. There has been a snafu, but we are very fortunate to be joined by your friend.
Yes, Lynn is the executive director of Hawes. I always pronounce your last name wrong. I know I shouldn't, Lynn, but I do. So just make me clear on how you say it.
It's Olenek.
Olenek. See, I always want to say Olenek, and that's wrong, and I know it's wrong. But so, Lynn, first of all, I want to say thank you to Lynn, because I wouldn't have my Beauregard if it wasn't for Lynn. And Beauregard has been a joy to my life for the past 7 years. We have just been so grateful to have him. Now, you've had a very interesting couple of days, Lynn.
Yeah, the last, well, I guess it's only been 24 hours, 36 hours, have been hectic and I guess rewarding because everybody's safe. And it was a routine flight in of animals from down south. And, you know, it didn't end up being anything but routine.
So, what did they explain what happened? Because I think that the details have been a little sketchy. So, they got caught in this weather pattern, and did their equipment fail, or what happened that brought this plane down into this golf course in such a catastrophic way?
Well, my understanding, and this is all conjecture, is that they were in line, ready to land on the runway. Everything was going along. And then, you know, the plane itself had something happened. And the pilots, they're heroes. They were able to get the nose back up and glide in across the golf course rather than, you know, I mean, it was more an emergency landing than a plane crash.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah.
I mean, from all the catastrophic things that could have happened, from there being lakes in the area to freeways in the area to buildings, someone certainly was looking out for our animals and these people.
Yeah, it's incredible, Lynn, because there were three people on board, suffered minor injuries. Most of the dogs I know have been checked out. Did they all check out okay?
It's really interesting because a number of the crates that the dogs were in were pretty mangled, and a number of the dogs, I guess five or six maybe, had gotten out of crates. And it was such a team effort. The guys on the golf course and the deputies who were first on scene, there's pictures of them with puppies stuffed in their jackets and getting animals stuffed into cars where they would be safe. While, you know, chaos ensues, I guess, is the only way you can say it. And they, you know, from the golf course to the emergency personnel, we had four or five total shelters waiting at the airport for the transport when they were told that where the plane had, you know, emergency landed, and they all rerouted there. And you know, everybody was able to get the animals together. We had our veterinarian heading on site, but decided to pull her back to where it was warm. And they did all the triage in the building and were able to, you know, look at just a couple of minor injuries, mostly scrapes, some bumps and bruises. And from what we could tell, there was no head trauma, no broken bones, and, you know, they basically you know, we dodged a big one here.
I don't think, because I helped you unload a plane from Houston once upon a time. And let me just say, I'm up for that again if you ever need any a volunteer from me. I don't think people realize how often, how many times you do this, Lynn, at Hawes.
Well, all of the shelters in the north and in the northeast, and some of them even in the west coast, Oregon, Seattle, we have good control over our population through spay and neuter. Therefore, there's families that are happy to take on animals. And in the South, it's not necessarily the same case where we're able to, you know, give these animals an opportunity. And there are a lot of national organizations that help with transports, whether it be by air or whether it be by large van, and we do one or two air transports a month, and those animals get dispersed among, the Elmer Humane Society, Washington County, Jefferson County, Lakeland. There's a number of shelters that go in with that so that one shelter isn't getting 50 animals. One shelter, you know, we're splitting the loads so that everybody's getting what they can handle. So this happens on, you know, this is routine, you know, on airplanes coming in with animals for us, coming over to Cripes Field because we're right across the street. It just is, we're a good central location. So it's at least once a month.
Once or twice a month. I had no idea that it was that frequent. And I definitely knew that there is just a different attitude in some parts of the country about whether or not to spay or neuter your animals. And I'm grateful, I guess, that we are able to take them and find good homes for them. By the way, we're talking to Lynn Olenek. She's the executive director for Hawes, Humane Animal Welfare Society, based right here in Waukesha. And we're talking about that plane crash, emergency landing, as Lynn pointed out, that happened yesterday with three people on board and about 53 dogs that were heading to Hawes. I know, Lynn, when something like this breaks in the news, and it was on national news last night, I saw it in ABC World Tonight, everybody wants to adopt these dogs. But you always have pets that need adoption, right?
Yes, we always do. It's always the young and the cute that get to go home. But there are a number of people out there who are more than willing to take on some of the older, more challenged dogs or cats, and those are always in the shelters and often overlooked. These guys have a story that people know. They know the backstory, so you know they're media darlings at this point in time. And what we hope too is that people will look at them and say, "Okay, but you know this little old beagle that's here next to them needs the home too, and we'll come and take the beagle." You know, there's always animals available, you know, for adoption throughout all of Wisconsin.
Well, and I was looking at your website, and it's, is it Hawes.org? Hawspets.org. Hawspets.org.
Right.
Yeah, I was looking at your website for some of the adoptables, and there is a wonderful older dog that looks like a walking mop that just speaks, that just calls to me.
Yeah, and actually that walking mop, we have a groomer who's going to donate services to get the walking mop left mopish. And, we can't say that it's just our organization. It's the community of animal lovers here. We have groomers volunteer their time. We have veterinarians who come and help out. We have people who come walk dogs and train dogs. It's more a community operation to care for the animals than just, you know, Hawes as an entity.
Now, let me ask you about the adoption process, not just for what you call the media darlings, but for anybody that's being, held right now at Hawes, because it has changed a little bit. Can you just walk in and take a look? You have to make an appointment, don't you?
We prefer if people send an application in ahead of time so that kind of cuts down on some of the the time involved for everyone, and that application is available online. A lot of people will look online and write on their application that they would specifically like to see Fluffy. And that's good for us to know as well. And then we do try to make appointments where we can, but we have open viewing every day, Monday through Friday from 1 to 5, and then on the weekends from 11 to 3. So people can come in and take a look, and they can still do things that way, but it's with the world from COVID, trying to keep better control over volume in the building, we found that having appointments really helps to speed things up.
Okay. And, you know, I do want people to check out your website just because it's so interesting. It's not just dogs and cats. I mean, you have rabbits and you have birds and you have rats even, you know. I mean, you've got a myriad of animals that people can come in and take to a forever home, right?
Yeah, ferrets. I know I've got two turtles right now that would really like to go home. They're some of our longest-term residents. You know, we have a number of different things. And we also we're not just about adoption. We do a lot of education programs for people here. I'm going to have a dog bark here for a second. We do a lot of educational programs for people in the community, for kids, trying to keep them on the path of humane values. And that's 50% of our mission. It's goes much farther in the community than just adopting animals.
No, it is. And it, you know what? It really is. I've been a part of your educational program, too. And the thing is that it's you just don't take an animal home and everything just happens. It's like you got to do a little research before you have a baby, too. You know what I mean? You have to know what the animal can.
You hope you do.
But I once again want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for Beauregard. He's just a joy. I just can't imagine my life without him.
Yeah. And it's good to talk to you, too.
Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you so much, Lynn. Lynn Olenek is the executive director of Haws Humane Animal Welfare Society of Waukesha County. Check them out at hawspets.org. Lynn, really appreciate your time. We are coming up against a break. We will be right back after this. Jane and Carol. Carol and Jane on As Goes Wisconsin.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Ragged part-time help.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Carol, words are hard. Carol and Jane and Carol filling in for Kristen Bry, who remains on her honeymoon. She is alive and well. I got a text from her last night, and then I said, now go away and go do honeymoony things.
Yeah, don't worry about,
don't think about work.
No, not at all. If you're on your honeymoon and romance abounds, then this is the last place you should be thinking about.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah. Good. Well, God, I'm glad she's having fun.
Yes. You are going to be back with me next Tuesday.
Yes.
For the show. And that's going to be kind of our Thanksgiving Eve program.
And can I just say this?
Yeah.
What happened? I know that I was kind of stalled for the better part of this year, but now that I'm a little bit more ambulatory with these new hips of mine, all of a sudden it's flying by. I can't believe that Halloween was almost a month ago.
Yeah.
And then we're looking at Thanksgiving next week.
Well,
so,
and I have neighbors who've had their Christmas lights up for 2 weeks already.
Okay, well, I will tell you this. I do have a tree up.
Come on.
Here's what happened. And this is full disclosure. I went downstairs. I needed to get like a huge pot. I was going to make a big, big thing of like soup.
Okay.
To freeze.
And instead you walked up with a tree?
But, well, okay. Wait, don't. Hey, no judgment here. I haven't known you for 40 years, Kay. And you've never judged me, but don't start now.
Continue.
So anyhow, I found this box that was sitting on top of this big pot, and I opened it up, and it was this little 2-foot tree.
Okay.
And it was such a pain to try and put it back. I just said, oh, to heck with it. I'm just going to take it upstairs and plug it in. Now, much to my daughter's chagrin, because she just was absolutely mortified.
Was she a guest?
So I came, but she did make me laugh. She's got a great sense of humor. And Elizabeth was like, Mom, this is wrong. And I said, well, it's up, and that's all there is to it. So I came down one morning, and she had a plastic rat sitting next to it.
Oh.
She said, I'm pulling out some Halloween stuff. If we're going to have, it's... I'm like, okay, fine, whatever.
That was the compromise.
Well, it was kind of a compromise, but also a statement. She made a statement. But anyhow, so I mean, so I do have a small tree up. It's no big deal. But we have this, you know, Thanksgiving's coming up. And I saw this story and I was just like, ugh. Yeah, now, everybody's got their favorites. Yes, no. I told you earlier I do the Lefse. But right. This is, there's a seltzer company called Bora. What's the name of it?
Is it Ora Bora?
Ora Bora. Ora Bora. Yes. And their new thing this season is they have the seltzer flavor is green bean casserole.
That's a crime.
I just don't understand it. You know, I don't. Sometimes in business, it's like those candy corns that they did turkey and gravy and.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I want to be in these meetings. I want to be in these meetings when these people decide that this is the way they're going to go, because I'm going to save you an awful lot of time, an awful lot of money, and an awful lot of effort in putting this stuff together, because I'm going to raise my hand and go, Carol here, no.
Don't do this.
I can't imagine how much of this they're going to sell. Who's going to drink a seltzer water that tastes like green bean casserole?
But the novelty will work maybe for this first year. You know what I mean? Unless it's really tasty, which...
It's not going to be.
Well, and I love green bean casserole.
Well,
and
so
I just can't imagine cold green bean casserole... In and of itself does not sound good.
It says it has a sweet, earthy, and buttery flavor and is like taking a bite of perfectly crunchy, succulent green bean casserole.
Mm-mm.
I'm calling baloney on that. I am. That's somebody who's got a journalism degree, who got a job in marketing.
You have to write this good luck.
This is, you got to make this attractive to somebody. And so I just find it fascinating. Although, you know, it's intriguing enough to me that I might seek it out just to give it a try.
Seriously?
Yeah, you may. When I come in next Tuesday, if I do, I'll let you know.
See, and that's how they're going to sell it, because there's going to be somebody who's shopping to go to Uncle Fritzy's. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna pick up a 6-pack of this just because it'll make them laugh.
Okay, sure.
Right, but as you pointed out. Research and development is very expensive. And
yes.
It's not like it just takes one day where you have the mad chemist come in and put a couple things in a test tube and they come up with this. This takes time.
Well, and in all honesty, I love gravy. Gravy, one of the, I mean.
Perfect food.
Oh, it's the best. And so my former sister-in-law once when I was over for Thanksgiving and I was scooping the gravy and I'm making a puddle and she goes, that's all I have. Please stop. And I'm like, okay, I seriously could put it into a glass and drink it. But if I'm going to do that, I'm going to actually make gravy.
Well, yeah, you want the real. And isn't that just drippings and flour?
Drippings, flour, broth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I mean, it's not like it's the most complicated thing in the world.
No, it's not. But I should just slather it on my thighs because that's where it's going to go anyhow. But it's sick.
You were talking about someone's penny pinching and she was talking about how you should just buy canned or jarred gravy because it's so much less expensive. Is it expensive to make gravy?
Well, it's more tedious than anything, and it can be a kind of a patchouli kind of a thing.
I'm sorry, a what?
Patchouli. Like putsy and can go either way. You can either make really great gravy or it can be horrible gravy. But I saw this article today about this woman who is trying to cut costs, actually, when it comes to this Thanksgiving. And she's doing more canned things, like canned green beans for the green bean casserole. And so she tested 5 different canned gravies. And she said, my husband wasn't crazy about it, but she said, I'm going to save money if I get canned gravy. And the not to give a walking commercial, but the one gravy that she said was the best is this gravy you can buy at Walmart.
Oh, wow.
She said the nothing against Trader Joe's. I love Trader Joe's, but she didn't care for that. And the Campbell's was okay and the Heinz was okay. But she said the Walmart gravy in the can was the best that she had tried. It was like $1.70. And she goes, I had plenty of time to save.
Well, we know what Carol's going to be stocking up on heading into next week. A little gravy queen.
I'll give it a shot. I'll buy the seltzer. I'll bring it in.
All right. We'll test that out next Tuesday. Stick around. We gotta go to a break. We will be back right after this. You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. My name is Dan Schaefer. I am filling in for Kristen Bry. You are listening in Waukesha, Wausau, Oshkosh, Amory, Wisconsin Rapids, Richland Center, and in Madison. Do we get them all, Jane?
That should be everybody.
All right. Listen, all across the state here in As Goes Wisconsin. Again, I am Dan Schaefer filling in for Kristen Bry. We're halfway through another 3-hour show.
You're doing
great.
We're
doing it.
Yeah, we're
making it happen.
Yeah.
We've got some great guests today. And joining us for the next half hour is Greg May, who is the Transportation Policy Director at 1000 Friends of Wisconsin. He advocates for policies that promote walking, biking, and transit in Wisconsin. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Jane. Really excited to be here today.
Now, you and I have talked a few times in the past about the proposed expansion of I-94 in the city of Milwaukee, the 3.5-mile east-west corridor that goes from, 70th Street to about 16th Street in the city of Milwaukee. And we talked a lot when I was writing about this at the recombobulation area. I wrote a multi-part series on the proposed expansion of I-94. That series was called Expanding the Divide. And you are part of a coalition that has been opposed to the expansion of I-94. You have advocated for a fix at 6 option. And shortly after the election last week, Tony Evers' Department of Transportation announced that they were going to select the 8-lane option. Greg, how you doing with this? You've had some time to process the information.
What I have, you know, it's a very frustrating decision for us. You know, there's a reason you release news on Fridays. That's when, you know, news goes to die. You know, that's because this project is controversial, if not slightly unpopular in Milwaukee. And so, you know, we're just really frustrated by, you know, how this whole process is going, but trying to drive people to the meetings in December.
Yeah, there's still going to be a couple public meetings, but you know, it's just there has been a remarkably little public feedback allowed throughout the course of this project. I think about all the different, you know, real estate projects that happen in Milwaukee and all these different communities all over the place who have, you know, all these public hearings about whether this building's going to be built, whether something's going to be redeveloped. You know, we've had so few public hearings on this project. When it was revived by Governor Evers, it seems like such a missed opportunity to really hear from what people have to say.
Yeah, it's something our coalition, and I'm a member of the Coalition for More Responsible Transportation, which is, you know, a collection of neighborhood advocates, environmental groups, and just all the folks who are you know, opposed to the highway expansion. It's something that frustrated us at the beginning, you know, these lack of public meetings. The DOT was trying to proceed, with meetings that happened in 2012 and 2013 from when the project was first announced. And that just felt really wrong to us. The project was canceled, 2017, 2018. And so to be, using public meetings that were 10 years old and not, kind of reducing engagement later on in the project just felt really wrong to us. So, we've just been disappointed by the whole process, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And I think with the new administration, they had the Biden administration and under Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg, Secretary Mayor Pete, has had a different priorities in running that department than we have seen in the past. And so I think, that opened up a lot of conversation about highways and about how they have historically divided communities and how these, highway widening projects have not solved the problem that they are seeking to, which is to reduce traffic. It's the joke that we have is just, another lane will fix it. Another lane will fix it over and over. We're doing the same thing again. We're adding another lane. That's going to fix it. Do you think it's going to fix it? Do you think this is the one that's going to fix it?
I think it is, Dan. I think it's going to be the first lane across the entire country that will finally fix congestion. It's going to be this one specifically.
Yeah, it's not going to be. It's not going to be transit. It's not going to be fixed rail. It's not going to be finding other ways for people to not drive on the highway. It's going to be this exact lane that's going to change it.
Yeah. And that speaks to some of the frustrations we have about this project. We've been doing the same thing, expanding highways for 60 or 70 years in Milwaukee, if we could have built our way out of congestion, we would have done it now. Our coalition was opposed to this highway for three main reasons. The first was environmental. At a time when climate change, is wreaking havoc and we should be taking action, to be expanding a highway is running counter to goals both that the Evers administration has stated and the federal government has laid out. The other reason is social. We're acutely aware of the impacts highways have had on Milwaukee, disproportionately impacting people of color. And so, to be expanding a highway that will continue that legacy rather than doing a restorative project is upsetting. And the last reason is fiscal. We can always find $1 billion to expand a highway in Milwaukee. We find billions of dollars for interchanges and for, this expansion projects. But at the same time, Milwaukee County's transit service is facing fiscal cliffs. Tens of thousands of people are facing service cuts. They won't be able to access their jobs, visit their friends, get groceries, go to the doctors. It's just incredibly frustrating that we always have money for expansions, but for transit and for local roads and things, we can never seem to find the money. It's just a very frustrating project.
It is really frustrating. And I think it's right to highlight that difference, because I think, as we saw, I think, you would hope that in this project, yes, there is, we do need to reconstruct this part of highway. It is old. What your group and the coalition that you're part of has pushed for is a modernization in this current 6-lane footprint and not adding a lane. And I think the transit component that you mentioned is key when looking back at another recent example of this with the Zoo Interchange project. So the Zoo Interchange project, they proposed this massive redoing of the interchange, but the state gets sued. The state was there. Mm-hmm. There were lawsuits, and the state had to settle and that settlement went towards the creation of what was the job lines route, and it funded these routes that would bring people from the city to job centers in the suburbs. So that settlement funded about 4 years of that service, which brought hundreds of people to hundreds of job centers in the region. The type of project that you would want to see expand and continued, and give people. People that, kind of the economic mobility of being able to get to a job and continued growth. And that program died after it was not funded after the life cycle of that lawsuit. So I think a lot of the transit advocates that I've talked to, in reporting this project, feel like the only way we can fund new transit is through lawsuits. It's so frustrating.
It's incredibly frustrating. And, you know, we actually know that there are tons of people in Milwaukee who want jobs and cannot access them because there's, you know, not transit service and they don't own a car. You know, owning a car is incredibly expensive. The AAA, you know, estimates annual costs maybe around $10,000 when you factor in insurance, you know, paying off loans and gas and everything that goes into owning a car. So, you know, we know that there's a disconnect between companies who want to hire people and are struggling to find workers and workers in Milwaukee who want jobs but cannot get to them. And so, you know, we are pursuing and hope to see permanent transit solutions in this project, because as you mentioned, it's very frustrating that we have to keep suing for these temporary short-term solutions. You know, we hope this project at least will help fund BRT on 27th Street and in National Avenue, which are two projects that have, you know, broad support in the community, rather than just giving some money to run buses while construction happens. And then as soon as that money runs out, well, all we're left with is a $1.2 billion expansion and nothing for transit.
We're joined in this half hour of the show by Greg May, who is the Transportation Policy Director at 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin. And we are talking about the decision from the State Department of Transportation to expand the highway with an 8-lane option instead of fixing at 6, which is what Greg and the Coalition for More Responsible Transportation had been advocating for. But I think one thing that did happen over the course of this project, and since Governor Evers revived the proposal to expand the highway, you know, there's been a whole bunch of different proposals for how to reconstruct the east-west corridor of I-94. There was even that ridiculous proposal during the Walker administration of talking about building a double-decker highway, which thankfully never came to fruition. But throughout this proposal, you know, they engaged what was called a supplemental environmental impact statement that allowed for at least some feedback, some changes. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the project has at least gotten better. It's not good. Good would be doing the fix at 6, but it has gotten better. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. And, you know, if we're going to be critical of the DOT, it's also worth praising them when they do things that are right. You know, the Fix It 6 proposal and, you know, Dan and all the people in your neighborhood, and tons of people have been pushing for the stadium freeway to be turned into a boulevard. You know, that seemed like something that was impossible before this project started. But, you know, with this additional outreach, you know, the DOT, the county and the city came together to say, hey, let's look at the stadium freeway. Let's look at this potential for reconnecting these two neighborhoods. What's the potential here? You know, and that's something that's creative and new from the DOT. And it's worth praising them for doing something different and going out on a limb. You know, that and they've downsized the interchange and they're looking at some funding potential around 27th Street BRT. You know, these are things that wouldn't have happened if they hadn't done additional outreach and folks hadn't shown up to advocate for them. And so I 100% agree with you. You know, the Fix It 6 option is better, but what they're proposing is better than what we started with.
Yeah. So they're improvements for the process. Credit to them for that. I, you know, as you're well aware, I've been an advocate for tearing down the stadium freeway and converting it to a boulevard. I really think that is just a huge opportunity there for the west side of Milwaukee and really getting at, you know, some of the big picture issues that were created by these unnecessary freeway expansions in the past. I mean, you look at the demographics on that side of town. West of the stadium freeway, you have a majority white neighborhood. East of the stadium freeway, you have majority black neighborhoods, and actually some of the most diverse neighborhoods that you mm-hmm. see, some of the most integrated neighborhoods that you see. And so expanding a freeway there would be problematic, but I think, you know, conducting this study that the way that they are and perhaps considering pursuing some federal dollars to do this as well, you know, it's not exactly a simple study. This highway goes over the Menominee River, so there are some complications there, so that we'll let the engineers take the time to figure that one out. And you mentioned that, and there's also the changes to the stadium interchange. The initial plans for the stadium interchange called for this massive triple-decker interchange, and it would be kind of the fourth major interchange between the lake and the zoo, which is just, it's just so much concrete and so many highways, but at least they have scaled that part of it back as well.
Yeah, you know, we're excited to see that, because you're right. You know, these interchanges are some of the biggest drivers of the cost of these projects. You know, we've spent so much money on the Marquette interchange, the zoo. You know, these are billions of dollars we're talking about, and this project, you know, the stadium interchange as well would have been huge. And it, you know, it just gets back to my previous point I was thinking about. You know. You know, we have so much money for these highway expansions, but, you know, we actually fund transit in Wisconsin, and I'm thinking about viewers across the state, or listeners as well, that we fund transit at a level about 25% less than we did in like 15 years ago when you adjust for inflation. So at the same time, when we're finding billions of dollars for these interchanges, our transit systems are having to do less with less. So, you know, any way we can find savings to make our interchanges smaller that are still practical and work, you know, I'm really here for it, especially as you mentioned, with so much concrete. You know, Milwaukee has faced some of its wettest years on record recently, and just adding impervious surfaces is going in the wrong direction for what is going to be a growing problem.
Yeah, we're joined by Greg May of 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin here. Greg's going to stick around for the rest of the half hour, and we're going to be talking more about the decision to build an 8-lane highway through the city of Milwaukee. My name is Dan Schaefer. This is As Goes Wisconsin, and we will be right back.
Give me, yeah!
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. I am Dan Schaefer, filling in for Kristen Bry today, and we have been joined by Greg May, the Transportation Policy Director at 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin. We've been talking about the proposed expansion of I-94 in Milwaukee. I think one point we can get to before we move on to some other stuff is just that the fact that Milwaukee does not face the type of crushing traffic that many other large metropolitan areas face. And I think that is part of the discussion around whether or not we really need to spend billions of dollars to expand the highway. Not only just to spend billions of dollars, but push these highways closer into diverse neighborhoods in the city of Milwaukee. The city does not really have the type, like, we have a rush hour in Milwaukee, of course, but we don't have the type of crushing traffic that you see in Chicago or New York, or even, I used to live in Seattle. There was some pretty bad traffic in Seattle, Atlanta. You know, we're not a city like that. And so I think there was a study done a couple of years ago saying that Milwaukee was in the bottom 10% of traffic amount of commute times for large metropolitan areas in North America. And so I think part of the goal that the state officials have told us throughout this process is addressing traffic. Well, Milwaukee has a lot of problems. We all know that Milwaukee has a lot of problems that need addressing. Is traffic really number one? Does traffic really need to get the billions of dollars? And, you know, traffic in general has kind of come back from the pandemic. Obviously, it went down for a while. But I think there's still a lot of people working remotely. There's a lot of people who have changed their approach to getting around the city, maybe biking more, maybe taking transit more often. You know, we have a BRT line that is going to be opening up in the city next year that will run from downtown to the Milwaukee Regional Medical Center. Anybody who rides a bus on the west side of town in Milwaukee like I do knows that there are a lot of people who take the bus to work at the hospitals over there. So perhaps that, in, you know, growing is going to reduce traffic on 94 once again. But, you know, it just seems like this is not the biggest problem when it comes to transportation in Milwaukee, getting on the highway.
No, I 100% agree, Dan. You know, there is a rush hour. You know, it's one of the frustrations of these projects is we build these massive highways for just a few hours of the day when there is, you know, a big, there's a crunch. And the DOT said, you know, we could fix the safety and kind of logistics concerns at six lanes. You know, the reason they're doing expansion is because of congestion. And so, you know, that's kind of why our team was proposing the fix at six. We, you know, we could, you know, address the safety and logistics concerns, which, you know, kind of show up with Brewers games and at some, you know, peak hours. But we could use the savings from that and invest in, you know, turning the stadium freeway into a boulevard, making better walking and biking connections in those communities, and also, you know, promoting bus rapid transit. Because as you said, there's so many problems in Milwaukee. And when I think of, you know, transportation problems in Milwaukee, I think about this really excellent article that Jonah Chester wrote a few months ago for Wisconsin Watch, just kind of talking about the, you know, traffic safety, road safety, and the differences between the bureaucracy at the DOT and the city of Milwaukee wants to make more safety features on roads like Fond du Lac, you know, Avenue and places where, you know, people are literally dying. All, you know, there's a huge, you know, reckless driving problem in the city.
Exactly.
And so there's just so many different transportation elements we need to be addressing that I, in my opinion, and I think in a lot of people's opinions, rise above the need to expand this highway.
Greg, I heard one of our competitors say yesterday, and he had cited some crash statistics and implied that widening this to eight lanes is going to alleviate that. Like you said, it's excessive speeding. It's reckless driving. I think eight lanes is just going to make that worse.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all ends up functioning, because one of the ways they've made this feasible, you know, Dan mentioned earlier the double-decker version of this highway. The way they worked around that problem, which is that pinch point around the cemeteries, is to, you know, narrow the lanes to the minimum amount allowed, which is going to kind of pinch cars all together into a point. And, you know, I'm not necessarily sure that that is going to be safer than what's out there now. You know, especially because right now it's a lot of slow moving cars at, you know, peak hours, which are, you know, result in more minor crashes. But, you know, as you mentioned, yeah, there's going to be more cars driving on this. And I think I would be fascinated to see what the traffic or the crash data looks like eventually after this, you know, project is done, because I don't think we're going to see this kind of safety results that are being promoted.
Well, and one of the big safety arguments that they, you know, they've made the safety argument throughout the process of wanting to expand the highway, but I think the six lane option would address some of the biggest safety concerns in that corridor, because I think some of the biggest safety concerns come from those left hand turn,
yes,
getting off the highway. Those we're going to get rid of, whether you're going to get rid of those left turn lanes that no one wants, whether it was going to be six or eight lanes. So I think the biggest, you know, if the biggest reason is to address safety, well, the six lane version was also addressing safety. Again, I'm very frustrated with the State Department of Transportation, with Tony Evers in particular. You know, he's a governor I agree with on a whole lot of things, but he's wrong on this one. He got this one wrong. Before we finish up here, I want to talk about another project that you have really been pushing a whole lot lately, which is to rethink the future of 794 in downtown Milwaukee. Tell me about that project.
Yeah, so the DOT is going to be spending another $300 million on 794. And so we're just starting a conversation with folks in Milwaukee about, you know, is there potential to turn this elevated freeway that runs between downtown and the Third Ward, you know, into an at-grade boulevard? We'd keep the Hone Bridge, which would just run from the Marquette interchange to the lakefront. And the conversation has been electric, Dan. It's been pretty amazing. You know, we see it's the most popular comment on the city's downtown plan update. We're seeing a ton of social media buzz about it. And we were really excited this week to see the mayor kind of mentioned in the Journal Sentinel that he's open to the idea. So, you know, there's a ton of great reasons I can dive into if you've got the time, but we also have a website called rethink794.com, which I would encourage people to head to for more of those arguments, facts, and renderings.
Cities belong to people. Cities don't belong to cars. We have plenty of options for cars to get through the city. You can get from 794 onto the Hone Bridge. This would open up so much interesting development downtown, and some prime real estate would be able to connect downtown neighborhoods to the Third Ward. I think it's a terrific, terrific project. We unfortunately don't have much more time to get into that project, but we'll have to have you back to talk more about that and talk more about the efforts that you are and the Coalition for More Responsible Transportation are undertaking as we get closer to those public meetings that we're having in December to talk about the I-94 project. So encourage people to show up at those.
Yeah, absolutely. Head to those meetings in December. I think they're on the 12th and 14th. And yeah, thank you, Dan. Thank you, Jane. So I really truly appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, I'm happy to come back and talk about these projects again. Thanks for elevating this conversation and you know, kind of sharing what our coalition is working on. So thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Thank you. Keep fighting the good fight. This is As Goes Wisconsin. I'm Dan Schaefer, and we will be right back.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.